Hey everyone, welcome to Third Shot Podcast. I hope you have your drinks ready because we've got another great episode coming up. And if you haven't already done so, as we always ask, please follow us or like us on social media. You can find us on Instagram and Facebook at Third Shot Podcast. You can watch us on YouTube at Third Shot Podcast. And you can also tweet with us on X. This on X, I don't know. You can find us there at Third Shot Pod. All right, Uncle Greg and Russ, you guys ready to do this?
Oh, we are.
Little toast.
Let's go. Cheers. How you guys doing?
I'm good. I'm enjoying a LaCroix. It's not a shot this time.
But, what flavor is that?
Raz cranberry. I feel like they are all the same flavor, though. It's like going to this is now. It's I feel like I'm doing stand up here, but it's like going to Subway, and they say, "Which bread do you want?" I sort of want to say it doesn't matter. It all tastes exactly the same. It's not like they have any good. Sorry, Subway, but it's not like they have any like great bread. It all tastes exactly the same to me. Are you guys that way too, or am I crazy?
That's really funny. I never thought about the Subway thing, but you're actually kind of right. I think they all do taste very similar, unless you get the flatbread, then like the texture's different. The
flatbread, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's all the same. It's weird. It's like these. I don't know. The look, LaCroix people. We're not. We just missed two sponsors. Sorry.
I know. I'm like, my mouth is dropping because I'm going, what are you doing? You cost us two sponsors. I know they're ready to sign with us any minute.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's nothing like Celsius. Now there's a drink, right? Like all of them taste different and delicious. Celsius.
Interesting.
I do love Celsius. That guava, there's like a guava something flavor. Love it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you guys turned me on to that at the tournament.
That's right.
St. Patrick's Day. So I do have those.
That's why I don't mess with, I'm drinking, you know, liquor. Because you definitely taste the difference.
I always taste it.
You can definitely taste the difference between the different types of whiskeys and bourbons. And yeah, they don't taste the same.
That's true. Unless you've had like 10 shots. Then it's like, whatever.
Then anything tastes like I don't know my taste anymore, right? I think like taste buds are just gone and I'm out of it.
Right.
Okay. I had a topic I wanted to talk about before I do. When you guys drink, and I know you know neither are big drinkers, but do you find yourself a happy drinker or does it change your mood in a negative way when you drink?
Well, on the rare occasion that I do drink, I don't get happy and I don't get angry. I get tired and hot and then I just end up falling asleep.
I'm kind of there as well. Yeah. I get tired now. I've been a happy person.
You're happy. You get happier. Like you get giggly or you tell more jokes. You're a little more outgoing. You're already outgoing. So, I mean, how do you get more outgoing?
Yeah, right. Yeah, I don't know. It's, yeah.
What about you, Uncle? The times I've seen you, I feel like you're very happy.
I am. I am definitely a happy drinker. I get giggly. I smile more. You can't stop me from smiling after I've had a couple of drinks. Now I got the Asian glow going, right? So I get the little rosy cheeks and that type of thing. So as long as I'm drinking alcohol that I'm not allergic to, because there are some alcohols that I'm allergic to, then, you know, that obviously has a physical reaction to me.
I've seen you after the wine.
Yeah, right. Not a good sight. That's not good. Although I love wine. That's the crazy thing. That's the tough part. I do love the taste of wine. I just can't drink more than a glass or five. So, you know. But it is interesting how certain things. Oh, actually, this kind of brings me into the topic. It's like the whole happy, angry thing, right? Sometimes competition brings in, you know, some people are really like positive competitors. Some people are real negative. So I witnessed this, right? I was actually recently, I was, you know, practicing, you know, playing some mixed doubles and practice stuff like that. And I was practicing against a husband wife team. And like the husband was just really, really angry. Like he was like, I mean, not yelling, but really telling his wife, his mixed doubles partner, like, doing it wrong. You should be here. You shouldn't be there. What are you thinking? And stuff like that. Then I went up to, you know, Sacramento to the APP tournament. Now this is a competitive thing, right? Everybody wants to win. So, you know, I get that aspect of it. But during matches, like these partners, and it didn't have to be mixed doubles. It could have been men's, it could be women's, whatever. Like a lot of times the partners were like angry at each other for missing a shot or not executing the strategy or something like that. And I thought, oh my gosh, this is kind of weird. This happened fairly close in time to each other where I noticed this. And then Dane Gingrich, who is, you know, very famous pickleball player, has been around for a long time, coach, pro player. He just posted an Instagram exactly about that when he was up in Sacramento. He witnessed the same thing. And I'm going, okay, it's just not me. Something's going on here where like partners are not treating each other with respect. It's crazy.
Maybe it's the same couple.
That's what I was thinking. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just the same couple. They're fighting and always playing and
causing a scene.
I mean, that's one thing I really enjoy about Bridgie and I. It's like when we play together, it's positivity, right?
Yeah,
I mean, I
don't care if
we mess up. We mess up, but you know, we're not at pro level or whatever. So the expectation is not to be at pro level. We just want to have a good time and enjoy each other. But I don't know, like these people playing 3-5 and 4-0 and stuff like that, they think they're on tour or something? I mean, oh, come on.
Have you seen like an uptick in incidents, or do you think that it's just now because more people are playing and the interest is there that we see it more often?
I think people are taking it more seriously now. I think because I'm not even talking like I'll see it in just rec play, right? Okay. Not even in, you know, just tournament play. I'll see it in rec play or just drilling, like they're yelling at each other. Like that one couple I was referring to, like they were just drilling. It was, you know, practice session in the middle of the week. It was a nothing thing, right? Like, let's get some hits in. Like what? Like, I don't know. They are a married couple, so maybe there's something else going on there, but.
Well, you've heard some like jokes around the pickleball community of like, never play with your significant other, or like pickleball will really test your marriage, or you might need therapy after playing pickleball with your partner. So, I mean, competition always really tests people's emotions, I think. It's a good, like, people who are dating should play pickleball together.
There you go, right?
And see how they treat one another. And I think that would be a telling, like, activity to do with your soon-to-be somebody. Yeah.
Well, Russ, if somebody was dating you, obviously you're happily married for a long time now, but if you were in the dating scene and you went to play pickleball with, a, you know, somebody that you're starting to date, what would they learn about you?
That pickleball makes it.
What would their impression be of Russ when they play pickleball with him for the first time? What are they going on a next date? That's what I want to know. Inquiring.
It depends. Do they want to be good at like a partner that's good at pickleball? Then no, it's not going to be another date. But... I think it would be. It is kind of a cool idea to make that an early date, and you know. See how they are. It's a low entry sport, as everybody says, right? Like you could just get out there and play it. It's like, why not? Now, do you play as a pair or do you play against each other? And which would be, or maybe you do both.
Right.
How is this person? Are they trying to hit the ball at me?
Oh, right. I think you play as a pair.
Yeah, right? See how you work together as a team, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because I think there's, you know, Bridgie and I, when I was down to Vegas, we were having dinner, eating sushi, and we were having this conversation. It's like, I think you could actually create these drills around how you partner with somebody and the communication and see whether you communicate well with each other, you don't communicate well, you know, that whole thing. I think there's something to partnering. Mm-hmm. To identify whether, yeah, things are going to work out off the court as well as on the court or worse, right?
Right. Right.
So I got another question for you. Okay. So this is off pickleball. When you were dating, like what would be kind of an indicator that things were going to work or things were not going to work? How would you figure it out?
Oh, jeez. I got to think back. You know,
let's say it's early on, like first, second date type of thing. How do you realize, okay, I want to go on the next date or no, this isn't going to work out. I'm cutting this one off.
That's a tough question.
Yeah, that's a tough one.
Because I feel like there could be so many different things. There's not just like one thing that could indicate that it's not going to be great.
Well, right. Give me one that's happened to you that indicated it's not going to be great.
Jeez. Okay. I don't want to sell the person out. I think it would be
too obvious. You don't have to name names, you know? You could just, you know, person X.
Right, right. No, the situation would would put it out there. You know what? Instead, I'll throw another friend under the bus. My friend... I don't know. We'll say my friend X. We'll say my friend Uncle X. No, I'm just kidding. Don't do that. No, I would say this, what this person would do is they would open the car door for the person that they're taking on a date. And if they reached over and unlocked the door for them, he's like, oh, this is going to be a good date.
Oh, okay.
I have no idea why. I don't know how that was an indicator, but that's what that person did.
I've heard that before.
Yeah?
Yeah, where it was the guy who was saying, you know, if a girl reaches over and then opens my door from the inside, then it like shows me that she's also thinking and caring about me too, because I just opened her door.
Okay. What has happened to you, Bridgie, that was like red flag or, hey, this guy, good guy?
Here's like a very specific example.
Okay.
It just kind of like, I guess, evading the like being honest and like upfront about stuff. So this has happened a number of times, but this one is very specific where I was on a date and this guy was saying like, how about we go someplace else and then you can drive me back here afterwards. And already that was like, no, like I just met you for the first time. Right.
Right.
So then, he's like, you can drop me off at, oh, that's why he's like, and you have to drive because I have, my motorcycle. And I was like, oh, okay, well, what kind of motorcycle do you ride? And he's like, oh, I don't know. And I was like, no. That's kind of odd because like normally people who are into motorcycles will know what kind of motorcycle they right. have. So I said, I was like, well, how do you not know? That's kind of strange. And then he was like, well, it's not really a motorcycle. And I was like, so what is it?
What is right? it? A moped or a scooter? What are you right. dropping them off for?
It's like a Vespa, but it's not a Vespa.
And he called it a motorcycle. I love it.
That's his motorcycle. Yeah.
He tried to be cool. Not that Vespas are not cool, because I think Vespas are cool. But that
the whole way he went about it was just so odd. And I was like, this is strange. There's no way I'm leaving with this guy.
Yeah. Okay, maybe I should stop. I have an electric scooter, as I've talked about on the show before. I often call it my hog because, you know, it makes it sound a little cooler.
Maybe do you have people drop you off at your hog?
Do you carry a motorcycle helmet on your arm?
I should put on the full gear and then just get on this thing.
Get your leathers on to get on your hog. Yeah.
Have the biker gang kind of logo on the back.
That's too funny.
Oh man. So Greg, well, Greg, you gotta answer your own question here.
Well, I have a funny story that I knew when this happened, I'm gonna marry this woman. So Bridgie, you'll appreciate this. Auntie and I went out, we were with a group of people, and it was raining that day or something, like it was wet. Anyway, we're running hand in hand, we're running somewhere, chasing, just having a fun time. And all of a sudden, we both trip. And she goes head first, and I land right on top of her. And we go skidding across the cement we're hydroplaning.
You were using her like a sled.
She was my sled. And we went probably a good, 100 feet. It seemed like 100 feet. And then after we finally stop, we get up and we laugh together. And I knew, okay, if she can laugh about me landing on her and sliding 200 feet or whatever it was, then okay, she's the one. She's the one. That was a good sign.
I never heard that story, but I love it.
Yeah, that's great.
It was fun.
Crushed her and then split her across cement. You know, if she's gonna be okay after that, then sure, yeah, that's the one you need to marry.
it was somehow, like, I don't know how she survived it, but she did. Oh, and it did.
I'm crying. So,
you just never know how the universe is going to talk to you and give you signs, whether it's give me a ride to my hog that's a little tiny scooter, or I'm going to slide on you first 100 feet.
Exactly.
Just never know.
Oh, man.
Well, speaking of partnerships, our guest today, I mentioned about Daniel at our last episode. I met him up at the APP Sacramento. I met him and his partner. They were playing in the doubles qualifier to get into the Pro Tour. And he was nice enough to, touch base with me after the tournament. And we made contact. And he's going to join us to tell us all about his pickleball journey and how he did at the ATP Sacramento. When we come back, Daniel Bien, a pro pickleball player. So come on back, Third Shot Podcast. Hey, thanks for hanging out during that break. Give us a little bit of time to bring in our next guest. But before we do, thank you so much for supporting us on social media. We love all the comments that you're giving us. Yep, on Instagram, on Facebook, on X. And we love the feedback that you're giving us on our videos on YouTube. So keep it up. We love it. And guess what? We are ready to bring in our guest today, Daniel Bien, pro pickleball player, and my new best friend who I met up in Sacramento at the APP. Welcome, Daniel, to Third Shot Podcast.
Thank you very much, Greg. Thank you very much. And yeah, I guess so. We're best friends now? Is that how we're introducing ourselves?
That's what I'm saying.
All right, awesome. I mean I had you as best friend, but one best is okay.
Well, Bridgie will want in on this action, so
I know, right? Now I get to add a BFF to this too, so let's do a little toast to Daniel and our new pickleball friendship, right? Best friendship, excuse me.
Cheers. There we go.
Cheers. Right.
Cheers.
Well, yummy. I know, right? Well, being we are starting this new friendship, we've got tons of questions for you to learn more about your background as well as kind of where you're headed in your pro career. But to start us off, can you share with us and our guests what your athletic background is and how did you get started in pickleball?
For sure. That's a great question. Honestly, I think a lot of people do ask, like, do I have a tennis background or things of that nature? And I'm always excited to share that I actually have zero racket sport background. I maybe did like one tennis camp when I was like 11 or 12 for a couple of weeks, but that's essentially the extent of my racket sport background. The main sport I played growing up was basketball. So okay. I think athleticism in terms of kind of just moving laterally and kind of just maybe understanding where to be on the court transfers very well from basketball.
Really? So you feel basketball is, you know, helps you with court awareness and where you're at. Tell me a little bit more about that. Like, what we very rarely talk to pickleball players that say basketball is the background that really helped them in the sport.
Gotcha. Yeah. Honestly, I think in basketball, we have that triple threat, right? The triple threat position. It's kind of like the ready position in basketball where you can shoot, you can drive, or you can do whatever you want from that position. And I think the kind of open stance in pickleball is quite similar to that, where it's kind of a solid base, open stance, and basically ready to attack the ball or move laterally wherever I want to go. And I think that's probably the biggest or most transferable skill that I've learned from basketball. And I guess the jumping ability definitely helps too for the overheads or whenever someone tries to lob me. Love it when someone tries to lob me.
Yeah, just smash.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Watch out. And that is true. I don't think we've ever talked to anybody whose background is from basketball. So that's pretty interesting to hear that. At what point were you thinking like, okay, maybe I'm going to step aside from balling and then start playing pickleball?
Yeah, I mean, I think I have a similar story of how I found pickleball to a lot of other people, where like kind of in the middle of the pandemic, I was really looking for some sort of competitive sport. At least in my area, they took down all the basketball hoops. So I couldn't play. Like there was legitimately no way I can go play. I was looking at how to pay and buy myself my own hoop and set it up at home. But like even then, those are all back ordered. I guess everyone had the same idea. They're trying to buy hoops. So my friend kind of introduced the game to me. He had like Amazon wooden paddles. We were serving overhead at first because like all we knew was tennis, and that's kind of like what the background was. But honestly, ever since kind of picking up the first paddle, haven't looked back. I've maybe played basketball once or twice since playing pickleball, and it's been almost 3 years now.
Wow. So you literally got hooked on pickleball and gave up all your other sports. You gave up your love of basketball. That's crazy. Yeah. So, you know, what has it been like from that first time where you're playing with wood paddles to like, how did you progress to the point where you wanted to play tournaments?
Yeah. I mean, I think I've always grown up loving competition. I think it's something that I really enjoy. I guess when I was younger, I think that my first sport was actually baseball. Started playing like Pee Wee baseball, moved into swimming. Actually, I did a lot of competitive swimming when I was younger, but I was always kind of in that, always competing in sports at some level. And then for pickleball, I found out there were local tournaments, something that we could do. Like my buddy and I, Harrison, we've been playing together the entire time, over 2.5 years now. And we started playing 3-5 tournaments and losing at every single game. Our first 3-5 tournament, we went 0-5 in a round robin. Felt great after that. but essentially just was like, hey, like this is super fun. Something that I feel like I can develop my game in. And basically did just that from 3-5 to 4-0, 4-0 to 4-5, 4-5 to 5-0. And then now I'm competing in the pro qualifiers and hopefully getting some solid wins in the pro draw soon.
That is amazing. And I love hearing that you went from a 3-5 to now a pro level, because that means there's hope for us.
There's hope, baby.
We can progress.
I'm still on that hope grind too. So, you know, like I'm right there with you guys.
Hey, but you pulled it off. I mean, when I met you up in Sacramento, you were with Harrison, right? Mm-hmm. And I apologize, Harrison, because last episode, I could not think of your name, but I remember meeting you at breakfast with Daniel, and you guys both went into the doubles qualifier, and you guys made it, right? You made it into the main draw. Talk to us about that experience.
Oh, man. Honestly, it was a little bit bittersweet because every single team we played was a team that we actually knew. First round were buddies of ours, second round buddies of ours, like literally every single round was people that we knew. But that said, these were all teams that have proven that they were at a high caliber level because they've all made pro draws before or have made it to the main draw before. And we had never done that yet. So our mindset was honestly just, hey, like we have nothing to lose. Let's just go out there swinging. And that's exactly what we did. I think our first game, we probably dinked the ball maybe 5 times. Everything else was just a firefight.
Oh my gosh. That sounds exciting. I wish I would have been there to see it happen.
Sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to compliment you, Daniel, because the one thing I really loved watching you play up at SAC was like your emotion. You were just fired up. You were fist pumping. You were screaming. You were letting it out. I loved it.
Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate it. I mean, if we both, Harrison and I, are known for something, it's definitely that we are extremely passionate and extremely loud on the court. So sorry to folks who aren't as privy to that, but definitely love showing passion, kind of wear my emotions on my sleeve, and honestly just love the game and will always be loud. I think that's definitely part of my MO at this point.
Well, I've also heard, along with, you know, kind of that loud, fun personality, there's also a really fun nickname that comes along with it.
I've heard you, the
quad father of pickleball.
I mean, I think a little bit of self-branding, trying to push that out there. But the reason why I do have that, or that nickname, is because at every single tournament that I've been to, someone has commented on my legs. Like I don't go out there pushing it. Maybe now I do, because I put it on my bio, the quad father of pickleball. But at every single tournament, someone has said, "Wow, like, you have massive legs," and I'm like, "Thank you."
Are you in the gym working this?
I do go to the gym. I mean leg day is my favorite day, and I love the squat, so I mean I guess it does come with I do work for it, but I mean it's never been something that I've thought to myself, hey, I have big quads.
That's hilarious. And so for the people who are listening, if they went to like your Instagram, would they be able to like get an example of what the quad father looks like?
Yes. I guess my most recent, one of my most recent posts, I think great photos by, oh my gosh, why am I blinking on his name? Porter Barr, a great guy, son of Susanna Barr, one of the top female pro players. He took some amazing photos at APPSAC, and the quads are in full display.
It's perfect
and magnificent, by the way.
You can attest to it.
I can, and I'm secure enough to say they are absolutely fantastic. You know, Bridget, I have to compliment your mom, because your mom should be the calf mother of pickleball, because she has the calves in the game. Truly, right? Everywhere she goes, everybody compliments her calves.
That is true. They're ripped. And I can only hope that when I get to be her age, mine are also just as ripped.
Love it.
So one of the really interesting things that I learned that I was getting ready for this conversation is that you quit your job to be a professional pickleball player. First of all, okay, like, what were you doing prior? And what actually made you decide to, like, hey, go all in and go for this?
Yeah. So, like, it's prior to pickleball, or going diving full into pickleball, I worked in the tech space probably for around 7-8-ish years. My most recent stint, I was working as a senior customer marketing manager at a tech startup, and was doing that for about 4 years. Honestly, enjoyed it. Love my job. But I think pickleball was kind of always in the back of my mind. I'm like, it's too fun. Like, basically, probably held up about 90% of brain space. And I'm like, I need to do something about this. And probably about a year in, everyone, I feel like, has this feeling at one point in their pickleball career or journey. They're like, I feel like I can go pro. And I mean, I think that just kept nagging at me. And I mean, I'm youngish, but getting older. And so I was like, hey, like, this is something that I feel like if I don't do now, I'm probably going to regret in the future. So I spoke with my wife, probably, you know, little by little, wore her down for a period about a year and a half. And then finally I was like, hey, like, I'm going to make the plunge. I think I can do it for at least about a year, without too much financial detriment, fingers crossed, and see what happens from there. But honestly, I think it's just the love of the game and that competitive nature that I have in me that I was talking about before.
Yeah. Hey Bridget, I hate to interrupt, but I got to ask this follow-up question. It's like, you know, in pickleball, what we've learned is there's not a lot of money yet in the sport of pickleball. So, you know, you're really doing it for the love, right? Or you feel like, no, this is going to be the financial future for you?
Honestly, that's a great question. I definitely hope that it can get to a point where it is something that I am doing where I am making money or equivalent of what I was before or somewhat similar. I think because of that, I mean, I was lucky enough to find a job as a kind of pickleball instructor at a nearby club. So doing that, working with, I guess, some brands via Instagram too on the content side, and then was lucky enough to land a sponsorship with PaddleTech, my newest sponsor, and they helped me out a little bit as well. So I think all that combined, I mean, I think the pickleball definitely has all the makings of being a very high level sport that's watched. We just need to definitely get that viewership up and kind of more money into the sport. But definitely fingers crossed for me for that future.
You got this. You got it.
Yeah, right. And we're hoping to see that, not just for you, but all the players in general. Is like, there's so much potential for the future of professional pickleball. And we hope that it gets there sooner rather than later. But I really do think that it's admirable that you're like going full force into this and your level of commitment is just, you know, above and beyond. But how does that also translate into your training? What is your training program look like that you're currently doing?
Yeah, for sure. I think, I mean, first things first, I definitely can be a lot better about my diet. I am a cereal snacker, so that definitely doesn't help. But I work out to eat, so I'll get there. Other than that,
we get that.
We get that.
On court stuff, though, I'm probably drilling about 1-2, sometimes 3 times a day, and then kind of in the gym as well. Honestly, I think just getting as many touches as possible. I know I need to catch up to a lot of the pros who are consistently getting better as well. So I feel like I kind of adopt the Mamba mentality. I really kind of look up to Kobe's work ethic. And, you know, he's like, hey, like if I'm up at 4, I can get one more session in than all of my competitors. And kind of adopting that mindset of, hey, like just getting one more session in a day means that I will eventually catch up to those who have been playing for years more than I have.
Well, what's interesting about, you know, you is like you're playing singles and you're playing doubles. At least at the APP, I saw you playing men's singles, men's doubles. Did you play mixed as well? I'm just curious.
I did, yeah.
You did, okay.
The partnership aspect of mixes has been a little bit difficult. Definitely kind of trying to make a name for myself there, but trying to play mixes as well.
But more on the men's doubles and singles and stuff. So I was curious, like, how much time do you put towards doubles practice versus singles practice? And, you know, is it tough? Because obviously you made the leap to be full-time pickleball player, but I don't know if your partners have. Like, is it tough to find time to you know, drill with them and practice with them?
Right. I think luckily I kind of have a steady rotation of partners or in terms of drilling partners that I have throughout the week. I kind of set up my week and be like, I have partner specific for singles drilling, I partner specific for doubles drilling, and then typically kind of at least 2-3 times a week, I will also set up games, probably around like 70% drilling, 30% playing games. Sorry, I kind of blanked on the question.
No, I was just curious, like, you know, how you structure all that, because, you know, to be at the level that you're at, you need to find good competition to drill with, to play against. You know, you're down in the San Jose area, the South Bay area. There's not a lot of courts, public courts, where you're going to find that high level competition. Obviously, the hub's right down there now where, you know, you're going to be able to find some good stuff. But it's not easy. So, you know, to really rise to the level you want to be, I'm just curious, like, how do you structure all that and how do you find the right people to play with?
Yeah, I think that's very true. It is tough to get those high level hits at all times. But I think I'm also a big proponent of, I guess, kind of trying to bring others around me to that same level, because I feel like the more higher level folks there are, the better we can be to push each other to get to that next spot. I mean, luckily enough, I mean, there are some really, really strong high level guys in this area. So like we will hit each other up, we'll meet up on a weekend or try and kind of travel to one another to make sure we get those reps. But definitely, I mean, I've been thinking and talking to some folks like, hey, maybe I'll travel to Arizona for a week or something just to get some high level reps in, maybe do the same thing in Austin or just travel to get those reps, because we definitely don't have like the 6-0 plus levels kind of situated in the Bay Area quite yet.
Well, if you ever want some mediocre level hits, I'm in Vegas, but there's also a lot of great places to eat here too.
Very true.
Right. And we know a trainer down there, so we can hook you up with a gym. Yeah, so yeah, it's all good. It's all good. Yeah.
So through all of the training that you've been doing, are there some things that you've specifically identified to work on to get you to that next level?
Yeah, I mean, the things that I think I'm trying to work on, I kind of have this mindset of work on the things that you're really good at, probably about like 60, 70% of the time, and then develop all the other stuff outside of that. Because I think especially in pickleball, you see so many different styles and different styles that work. I mean, I think perfect example is like someone like Jack Sock. I mean, granted, he had years of tennis experience and very high level player, but like the way he runs around his backhand, so he just, all he does is hit that forehand. I feel like the court is small enough, and if you're athletic enough, you can kind of get around some things. So yeah, focusing on the strengths. My favorite shot is just that forehand counter. So always will kind of run out of the way and smack the ball with my forehand. Things that I am continuing to work on is definitely, I think, making sure my stamina is up for singles. As well as, you know, I guess the quad father, the legs definitely do come in handy for those long tournament days, because sometimes you're on site for 12 plus hours, and that definitely takes a toll on you.
Oh man, I mean, even the day that I saw you, you know, you were playing singles at 8 a.m. You had doubles. I think you had mix. I mean, you had a full day. So I can only imagine that the stamina has to play impact. And I'm thinking, like, you obviously are focused on it. Are the other pros at your level of, as you know, physicalness and, you know, what your training is like? Obviously you got the quads over them, but you know, are the rest their physical attributes being able to stay up with you? Or do you feel like that's one of your advantages over the competition right now?
I think, I mean, you're seeing it more and more, like the top like 25 pros, they definitely have a very strong regiment now. Like you see them with their own personal trainers, you see them adopting coaches. Some people have kind of like vision tracking coaches. So like the level is definitely rising. But I think at least hopefully to be able to break into that top 100 or that top 50, hopefully my kind of motivation, my work ethic helps me with that Mamba mentality, helps me kind of edge out those folks. But I know it's only going to get harder and harder as, you know, kind of more money does come into the sport and those top level players adopt more coaching and expertise and regimented schedules.
You said something that like perked my ears, visual tracking coaches. Right. What do you work on in visual with your visual tracking coach?
Honestly, it's something that I heard over a podcast. I think Leah Jansen was working with I think he was a baseball visual tracking coach, but then it was kind of helping her understand like to essentially track the ball a lot better while playing singles or doubles, just so you're making contact very well, or, you know, working on peripherals and things of that nature. I think apart from that, I'm not too sure, but that's something that I've heard. I'm like, oh, that's maybe something I can also look into in the future.
Yeah, because I have a baseball background, right? And one of the drills that we used to have in hitting is we would write numbers on a tennis ball, right? 1, 2, 3. And that was simulating the type of pitch that you're getting. Like a fastball would be a 1, a curveball would be a 2, oh, wow. A screwball would be a 3, right? And then people would throw that to you and you would have to identify the number, like focus on the number of the tennis ball to focus on knowing what pitch is coming at you. And right. Once you trained your eye to do that and you trained your brain to do that, you could pick up the spin of the baseball. You could see the threads of a baseball the same way. And I'm wondering, with pickleball, there's no threads, right? It's just it's just the green ball, right, with the holes, but you still see kind of a rotation, yeah, and you kind of see how they're hitting the ball, so right, you can kind of tell what slice. But that's why it intrigued me. I'm going, huh, okay, the visual, yeah, side, if maybe that would help if you could really identify like what's going to happen, mm-hmm, with the ball in the air as it's coming to you, or what's going to happen on the bounce, so that, mm-hmm, you can kind of set up better.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I think same thing in the tennis, or like some, I guess my current boss, he's been in like the tennis world for a very long time. And something that he's mentioned to me too, like tennis players are watching like what grip their opponent is using, how they're holding that racket, or like what sort of spin that they're putting on that ball. And I think to be high level at pickleball as well, that's the kind of stuff that you're going to need to start looking at. It's not just what you're doing yourself on the court, but you have to analyze how exactly your opponent is hitting that ball, so you're better prepared to counter whatever it is that they're doing.
Yeah, there's a lot that goes into it that I think just like general rec players do not even think about, because all of that is like blowing my mind. But that's incredible that, you know, that there's even coaches out there to help you with the visual tracking piece of it too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now you're a coach yourself, right?
Yes. Yeah. Recent coach.
How is that going? Tell us some of what the challenges have been and what your clientele is like.
Honestly, I've loved it. I think just because I love pickleball so much, and I want more and more people to fall in love with the game. It's been a lot of fun. I think my general clientele, or their level, tends to be probably around like a 3.0 to a 4.0 level. So still more in the beginning stages. So just teaching them the strategy, everything that I've had to learn and pick up on from playing at that 3-5 tournament, losing every single game, and hopefully help them progress a lot faster than I did the last 2.5 years or so. But it's been a lot of fun. I think luckily no challenges quite yet. Maybe I'll run into them in the future, but honestly, just loving the experience and just being able to share the game I love so much.
Well, as a coach working with, you know, 3-0 to 4-0 level players, like what's the drill that you find helps them progress?
Honestly, I think a lot of things that people don't realize, or the common rec player doesn't realize, is, I mean, the stuff that I work on to improve my skills, I just do the same thing over and over again. It's like the same 5 drills over and over again, but then focusing on some new aspect while doing those same drills. Like, am I balanced at this point? Am I contacting the ball properly at this point? And do I have the right footwork while doing that same stroke? So I think it's letting them know, hey, like sometimes it just takes repetition. Like it's repetition, repetition, repetition.
Yeah.
Yeah, that definitely helps.
Darn it. I was hoping for, you know, some
the secret insight. Yeah, the magic
bullet that was going to change my game, Daniel. I thought that was coming. I'll get it out of you.
Keep the ball in front of you and hit the ball hard.
Okay. Okay. Done. I can do that. Yeah. I might not keep it in, but I can hit it hard. I can go. Do that.
So earlier you had mentioned that you are sponsored. I want to make sure that you have an opportunity to kind of speak on behalf of your sponsorship and kind of get the word out a little bit and give us a little plug.
Gotcha. Yeah. I mean, new partnership with Paddle Tech this year, using the Annalee Waters 12.7 millimeter paddle. That thing hits like a rocket. I love it. So definitely a lot of fun. I always prefer the power paddles over the control paddles, because I feel like I can always find the control. But I'm really appreciative of kind of the belief that they have in me. And hopefully I can, you know, rep them well and do well in the pro scene.
Awesome. Hey, you know, I got to do a little follow-up question from earlier. You and Harrison made it into the main draw. Unfortunately, mm-hmm. I was not able to watch it. I think I was playing at the time. Gotcha. So tell me, who did you play and what happened? What was it like?
Well, that part is not as glamorous. We went 0-2.
But who did you play? Who did you get to play?
First round, we played Johnny Goldberg and Nico something. Sorry, I'm blanking on his last name. And then second round, we played, I think, Richard, also going to butcher his last name, sorry, Richard L. Jr., and then Austin T. I can give them the initials, but not, can't pronounce the last names. But I mean, solid players. Definitely just kind of next level balls. I think we just, that's the kind of the area that we just need to see higher level reps. They attack from lower, they attack harder, they attack smarter. So just got to get used to that pace for sure.
Is that what it was, out your takeaway from it is like, okay, seeing where they're attacking from, I got to be ready for it more? Or is there another takeaway that you said, oh my gosh, I was not expecting that?
I think, I mean, maybe it's a little bit of self-confidence, but I'm like, I feel like I'm right there. Nice. With that said, I mean, I think it's the consistency, right? They're making that extra ball. They're putting in a place that's not unattackable for me. And then they're finding spots that are just like maybe that one more inch out of reach that I'm not used to. So I think it's the level continues to rise, and people are finding different ways to make the game work for them. So I mean, hopefully continue to improve and just be right there with them. And hopefully someone else in the future is going to say, hey, I played Daniel, and you know, he was doing this thing exceptionally well.
Fingers crossed. I think that's going to happen for sure.
For sure.
So, I mean, congratulations though, for even making it that far in the APP stack. What's your next tournament, or kind of what's ahead for you in the next few months or so?
For sure. I'm actually flying out next Tuesday to Miami. So I'll be there playing doubles, actually, with a different buddy of mine, Juwan. And then after that, I'll be at PPLA in April. So if you guys are there, come say hi. We'd love to chat.
Very cool. Absolutely. And if people want to follow you on your Instagram, shout, give everybody your handle on Instagram.
For sure. At DB Pickleball. Yours truly, the quad father.
Yeah, go check out those quads. Check out his fun videos, all that wonderful content.
I gotta share one little tidbit with you, Daniel. So in researching and getting ready for this, right, I just googled your name, right, and see what comes up, right. Uh-oh. And there was an old video of you playing doubles like a year ago maybe or something like that. Oh, really? Right. And I was watching like a few points of it and stuff like that, and I'm going, oh my gosh, like, you have improved. I'm not that you were bad back then, I mean, you were already good, but you've improved so much in that period of time since you posted that video. I mean, it really inspired me. It's like, okay, if you put in the time, you put in the work, you can make huge leaps in your game. I mean, to the point where, like, what you're doing right now, which is kudos to you, you're going pro. I mean, that's amazing.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Definitely a lot of hours on court. I mean, I think I go through a pair of shoes a month or even less than that. Yeah. So, I mean, that's where it starts to get a little expensive. But I think just to say that, you know, putting a lot of time on the court for sure. And I definitely think, like I said, repetition.
All right. Well, yeah, we will be keeping an eye on you in your next upcoming tournaments. We'll stay posted. Thank you so much for joining us today and sharing all of your tips and tricks and your fun stories. We do want to do one more toast to your next tournament in Miami.
To the quad father. Cheers.
The quad father.
The quad father. Baby. Thank you so much for joining us today, Daniel. It was a lot of fun.
Thank you very much for having me. Really appreciate it.
We are big fans, big supporters. So we will be in touch, and hopefully we're going to get you back when you win your first championship, which will not be that far from now.
Let's do it. By the end of the year, I promise you.
All right. Well, thanks again for coming on the show. And thanks for all of you for listening to Third Shot Podcast. We really appreciate all the support that you've been giving us. Bridgie and I will continue to share our journey in pickleball. And we continue to have the quest to bring on the best guests for you, just like Daniel. So thank you so much for Daniel. Check out his Instagram account at DB Pickleball. Check out those quads. You will not be disappointed. And you can support this show by subscribing. We promise to have more amazing guests just like Daniel in future episodes of Third Shot Podcast. So let's continue. Share our enjoyment for the game and grow this pickleball community together. See you next time on Third Shot Podcast.